We live in interesting times. As such, I want to share with you a quote from science fiction author Robert A. Heinlein. He said, quote, "I will accept any rules that you feel necessary to your freedom. I am free, no matter what rules surround me. If I find them tolerable, I tolerate them. If I find them too obnoxious, I break them. I am free because I know that I alone am morally responsible for everything I do," end quote. That is from "The Moon is a Harsh Mistress," and I feel like as things are collapsing, as rules are becoming more and more insane, we are put into the unfortunate position of having to assess for ourselves what we are willing to do about it and what rules that we are willing to abide by. The ideal of a government of, by, and for the people becomes less and less attainable, and our best bet may be to make them more and more irrelevant in our lives. Whatever you do about it, though, please be careful out there. You alone are morally responsible for everything you do. Well, it's been a busy fortnight, so what I'm going to do is this. From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 171 of Little Brother for the 15th of March 2026. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. Ever wonder how your car's tire pressure sensors work? In the valve stem of each rim, there's a sensor that runs on a small battery. That sensor then uses a radio signal to give pressure readings to your car's computer systems. Of course, with all the cars on the road, it's critically important that your car is able to tell its own tires apart from those of other cars nearby, and that it's able to tell the four tires apart from each other. So, unique identifiers have entered the chat. Now that it's done, you have two things come along for the ride. One is that it is now necessary to pair the pressure sensor with the car anytime that it is changed. And the other is that you are broadcasting an easily detected, unique signal from four places in your car, providing an easy way to track a vehicle via a network of sensors. And now you have one more thing to worry about. But that doesn't matter, because there's always Flock. You didn't think I was going to do an episode without mentioning them, did you? I've mentioned recently how some law enforcement agencies in California, amusingly Mountain View being one of them, have been either stopping or at least looking into the use of Flock safety cameras in their jurisdictions. Well, now two unnamed individual California drivers have sued over the practice. They are seeking to make this into a class action suit, representing anyone whose data was collected by a Flock camera in California since 2022. Unfortunately, this suit might not have any traction outside of California, as it's based on a California state law, the ALPR Privacy Act, which prohibits captured license plate data from being shared with out-of-state law enforcement. If you wear smart glasses from Meta or know somebody who does, you might want to exercise restraint and caution or maybe even rethink your purchase. In news that surprises nobody, a whistleblower has surfaced whose job in Meta's employ is that as a data annotator. He is classifying the video, audio, and still shots captured by the glasses. This whistleblower has confirmed that in the course of a day, they see nudity, people having sex, banking information, and all manner of other data that it's likely the wearer and those around them would not want shared. Police in South Korea have lost control of cryptocurrency they seized by not understanding how it works. During a seizure, it's apparently common for the police force there to post photos on social media of whatever they have seized. Well, how do you post a photo of cryptocurrency? What they did was they posted photos that contained the recovery phrases, and don't you know it, somebody spotted that and, shall we say, recovered the currency. The state of Florida has banned a nurse from practicing over a vulgar but arguably political and First Amendment protected statement made on social media. Lexi Lawler, who formerly worked at a hospital in Boca Raton, has been blacklisted from all Florida state hospitals over her comments directed at White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt. The comment on news that Leavitt is pregnant was, quote, "As a labor and delivery nurse, it gives me great joy to wish Karoline Leavitt a fourth degree tear. I hope that you fucking rip from bow to stern and never shit normally again, you cunt." End quote. Now, we can argue over whether or not being fired by the hospital is justified. After all, we on the left have often celebrated the firings of individuals for racist remarks. However, when it comes to the state of Florida blacklisting her, that steps over a clear First Amendment boundary. Speaking of freedom of speech, let's move to a country that does not have any. Mulvad VPN has been attempting to advertise their services to customers in the United Kingdom. The UK has the dubious reputation of being the most surveilled country in the West, and they are only escalating it further. Mulvad created a TV ad titled "And Then" that illustrates the slippery slope from here to full-blown Orwell. The ad was banned on TV, so they made an outdoor ad criticizing the TV ban. And that too was banned. Finally, in a brilliant PR stunt, they took the initial ad, loaded it into a high-powered projector, and started traveling the country with it, projecting it on the sides of buildings, starting with a billboard that they had taken out in London that was mostly white, with just the words "And Then" in the middle of it. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Time. We'll start with the big one. Cyber warfare is now a thing. I kind of fully expected this, but the news from last week is that medical equipment supplier Stryker was hit with a cyber attack. The incident happened on Wednesday the 11th when Stryker's Microsoft environment was breached. The Mobile Device Management Platform, or MDM, was used to wipe workers' devices, and it even appears as though personal data was wiped on the phones of the workers who chose the BYOD path. The reporting is that the attack was carried out by Handle a Hack, which is affiliated with Iran's Ministry of Intelligence. So in a nutshell, this was war being war. The damage done is significant, much greater than the effort that it would have taken to pull it off, and from the attacker's perspective, it wreaks havoc on the enemy. Now, I have to believe that there was a misconfiguration in the MDM, but I believe very strongly and have for decades that work devices and personal devices should be separate devices. And yes, that does mean you're going to have to carry two phones, but so what? I'll talk about the benefits of keeping them separate later in this podcast. In more state-sponsored hacking, it seems like Russian hackers have been able to breach the Signal and WhatsApp accounts of Dutch officials and journalists. Probably others as well, but this news comes to us from the Dutch Military Intelligence Service, so it is centered there. Just as a reminder, Signal itself is pretty damn secure, but it runs on a device that probably isn't. Take the steps to protect and secure your phone or the security of your apps becomes completely irrelevant. As the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, has suffered a few blows this year, starting with a gutting by the so-called Department of Government Efficiency, and followed by the present lack of funding to its parent department, the Department of Homeland Security, it seems like there have been a couple of breaches of U.S. government systems. One of these was a system operated by the FBI, which system manages wiretapping requests. The available information does not identify a hacking group behind it with any certainty, but Salt Typhoon, a state-sponsored group in China, is the prime suspect. At the same time, a hacktivist group here in the U.S. that calls themselves the Department of Peace have claimed that they've gotten into ICE and have extracted and released data concerning ICE contracts with over 6,000 companies. Expect more of this as well. Now, I don't know about y'all, but I'm getting really tired of censorship in social media. One of the things that I love about having this podcast, and especially about it being hosted on a fully independent, privately owned, nonprofit platform, is that I can say all of the words that get censored. I do not need to worry about getting demonetized, because this is not how I make my money. This is a labor of love. Of course, that doesn't mean that I can act with total impunity. But I can at least talk like a human being without having to use stupid expressions like unalive. I don't have to step around things that might piss off the platform owners, though admittedly, this is partly because the platform owners think a lot like me about these sorts of things. But I mentioned all of that because of Microsoft. For those of us who are in the position of having to use Microsoft at work, we are constantly barraged by Microsoft's insistence on inserting Copilot AI into fucking everything. Hey, there was one of those words. The backlash from this has gotten under Microsoft's skin. So, Microsoft is backing off, right? Yeah, that's funny. No, of course not. It seems like the term Microslop NoPilot has taken hold, and Microsoft responded to this by banning the word microslop on their Discord. Yep, that's the right answer, right? People hate the product, so you try to stop people from talking about how much they hate the product. Of course, workarounds were very quickly devised. Just on a side note here, have y'all ever seen this thing called LeetSpeak? You've probably used it to create a password here or there. You substitute numbers or symbols for letters. Like, for instance, 1337 is LEET, L-E-E-T, as in LEET speak. It was something that emerged from hackers in the 1980s and 1990s looking for ways to bypass content filters. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Anyway, once Microsoft figured out that people worked around the content filter, well, they just locked the Discord. Much like getting Americans to use the metric system, Microsoft will do anything but actually solve the fucking problem. By the way, I can say Microslop no pilot all I want. In other news, let's talk about migrating things to the cloud. It seems that with the kinetic hostilities taking place in the Middle East, not going to use a euphemism because I don't have to. Let me tell you a fresh take. In other news, let's talk about migrating things to the cloud. It seems that with the war taking place in the Middle East, that Amazon Web Services, or AWS for short, has suffered some damage to their data centers in Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates. One of the comments that I saw on Reddit put it really quite well, quote, "If everything is in the cloud, then the cloud becomes a literal target," end quote. So, I'm not going to say that using the cloud services can't be part of a disaster recovery strategy. It certainly can, and it is certainly relevant. But let's be clear, moving things to the cloud comes with risk, and we've seen what has happened in the past when Amazon has just had a simple technical issue. Having a data center reduced to a fucking smoking hole is a bit beyond a simple technical issue. So, last episode, I made mention of an age verification law in California that didn't make a lot of sense. The law basically said that any operating system had to expose an application programmer interface, or API, in the parlance of computer programmers, that would allow any program running on that computer to inquire about the age of the user and get an answer. Under California's law, this would require that age be reported at the time that the account is created, but it would impact every operating system. So it's not just Windows and Mac OS, but also Android, naturally, and iOS, and Linux, and BSD, and whatever else. Well, now, California's law is the one that's getting all of the attention because, as I said last episode, people are making the mistake of thinking that this is just California being California. But I pointed out at the time that Arizona and Colorado are doing the same thing. And then I dropped what was basically a throwaway line at the time. I said, when I see this kind of pattern developing where multiple states do the same asinine thing at the same time, I tend to think there is a lobby group behind it. Well, despite being a throwaway line, it seems like I was right. Shortly after I published that episode, it seems like New York joined the fray. And they weren't satisfied to have the user self-report. No, New York is going to require you to prove it. And this is where we cross the line from a badly architected and misapplied inconvenience into flat-out privacy invasion. Because in order to prove it, you've pretty much got to prove who you are. But there's more. Louisiana, Texas, Utah, Illinois, they have all joined into this as well, and now the federal government is too. With not one, but two separate bills. So, I said I was right about a lobby group. Well, two Reddit users, Aaron SB and OKLinkenberry3296, have done the homework, brought the receipts, and found out who is at the bottom of this. It appears that the answer is Meta. Meta, I will remind you, is the owner of Oculus, WhatsApp, Instagram, and Facebook. They are the ones putting those fucking smart glasses on people's faces that are monitoring the world around them, and now they want to wedge their way into every fucking device, right down to the fucking core. As I said last time, how about no? So, what's the motive? Well, I'm going to cite a classic Doctor Who episode for the answer. In 1977, there was an episode called The Sunmakers. In one scene, the Doctor is speaking to the manager of an industrial facility on Pluto, and he asks the manager, "What does the company produce?" And the manager's answer, was the single most pointed thing he could possibly say. He said, "The company produces profit. What else is there?" When we talk about corporate behavior, it does not matter how much the things that a company does serve the general good, or how much they are undeniably evil. The goal of the corporation is to produce value for the shareholders. That is often referred to as a fiduciary duty. It's an actual legal obligation that the corporation has to do their level best to get the stock price to go up. At a fundamental level, profit is a perfectly legitimate way to do that, and I'm actually okay with it in general principle. The problem comes when corporate profit comes by monetizing something that is not theirs to monetize, which brings us to why Meta might want to do this. You see, there's money in age verification. Even though the operating system can report what it knows, it has to know before it can report it. And that's done through the cloud, at a range of prices that one of the Redditors I mentioned before estimates to be between 10 cents and $2 a pop. I'll include a link to both Redditors' write-ups in the program notes, along with links through the Internet Archive and a PDF of the research, just in case the content gets removed. Or, nope, wait, hold on. I'm going to skip the original link and just include the archive and PDF because the posts were removed while I was writing about them Saturday afternoon. Of the four posts I was tracking, one of them was actually not recoverable. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't mention some related things that are also going on. System 76, a manufacturer of open source friendly hardware, has written a very thoughtful commentary on the topic, and I'm including a link to that as well in the program notes. There's also been a new Linux distribution, Debian-based, called Ageless Linux. They exist to actively disobey the demand. I am hoping that they've got a decent legal team because it does look like what they are trying to do here is become a test case. Finally, I'll mention Midnight BSD. Fewer people are aware of BSD than Linux, which is unfortunate because it is a very similar but much older system, and like Linux, there are many distributions of it. Midnight BSD is one such distribution. What they've done is they've taken advantage of the nature of the BSD license, and they've created their own license that expressly forbids the use of their operating system in the state of California, effective January 1st, 2027, the same day that California's law becomes effective. I have reached out to the two Redditors to see if either of them are interested in sitting for an interview. I have not as yet heard back. I received a quick note from one of my listeners. Julie Bernstein writes, "Hi, Chuck. I thought you might be interested in signing this. Thanks, as always, for Little Brother." Well, you are, of course, entirely welcome. Little Brother is a labor of love, as I said earlier, and one of my ways to give to the community. So it's my great pleasure to know that there are people listening, and it's always nice to hear from my listeners. So, to the matter of what Julie said, it concerns something that's been a long-time concern of mine, media consolidation. It's important enough to me that I've included a link to it, where else, in the program notes, which are getting admittedly a little heavy at this point in time. And it is a site where you can sign a petition against the merger between Paramount and Warner Brothers Discovery. It has been claimed that any decisions about programming will be confined to commercial concerns, but let me ask you something. How long do you figure before anything not aligned with the administration suddenly becomes commercially inviolable? Anyway, if you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can drop me a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com, and I'd love to know that you're out there and listening. Earlier in the show, I was talking about the Stryker hack. One of the things I mentioned was that work phones and personal phones should be separate physical devices, and I wanted to take a second to back up my thinking on that. So, I have two reasons I want to present to you, which come from two different directions. The first one should be obvious from the earlier coverage. When you go and install a mobile device management app on your personal phone, you are handing control of your phone over to another party, your employer. On many levels, you're trusting them. You're trusting them to be competent, and that they have the knowledge and skill in-house to configure the system correctly, and that it only impacts the company data and not yours. You're trusting them to be benevolent, and that they have your best interest in mind, and won't be poking around how you use your phone outside of work or altering its contents. And you're trusting them, again, to be competent enough not to get hacked. Stryker failed on the first and the third of those. And as for the second item in the list, honestly, it really doesn't matter how much you trust or approve of your employer or what they do. It really doesn't matter how much you drink the Kool-Aid. If you trust them with access to your device, you're giving them too much power. Because a corporate entity can turn from benevolent to malevolent over time, to which I will just gesture generally at a certain search giant that used to have "Don't be evil" for a slogan, but doesn't anymore. The other one is about disconnecting. Unless you're on call, you can simply leave your work device somewhere safe when you're not needing it. Come home, plug it in, and just leave it there when you go back out. It stays there until it's time to go to work again. This is less about personal OPSEC and more about your own personal mental health. At the end of the day, you need to have the ability to unplug when you're not on the job. Of course, if your job involves being on call, then yeah, of course, take it with you when you're on call. I'm not suggesting you should act irresponsibly to your employer. I'm just saying that you should act responsibly to yourself. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. Angela Lips is a 50-year-old mother of three adult children and a grandmother to five children who has basically lived her whole life in Tennessee. She's only ever visited neighboring states like Kentucky, Arkansas, North Carolina, never flown anywhere far flung, certainly never been to North Dakota, 1,000 miles and seven states away by the most obvious route, a journey that involves interstates 24, 57, 74, 39, 90, and 94 in that order. And so it was with great surprise when she was arrested for a crime that happened in Fargo. So anyway, what happened is that a woman in North Dakota had committed bank fraud using a fake military ID. AI-based facial recognition fingered her, and she was arrested at her home in Tennessee. Her public defender in Tennessee told her that she would have to go to North Dakota to fight the extradition to North Dakota, which is every kind of fucked if you ask me. So here she is in North Dakota. And she sat in a jail cell, and sat, and sat, and sat. And finally, 4 months later, which is 5 months after her arrest at this point, the police finally interviewed her. Now, it's worth noting that she had bank records that placed her clearly in Tennessee. They placed her in Tennessee cashing a Social Security check, buying cigarettes, ordering a pizza, all in Tennessee, all recorded activities on her bank card, but nobody asked her until then. So they set her loose. They set her loose there. 1,118 miles from home. In the winter weather. wearing the summer clothes that she was arrested in 6 months prior, with no way home. And all of this happened because an AI misidentified her. North Dakota, you fucking failed. Tennessee, you fucking failed. Fuck you both. This was a travel meeting that should have been an email. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the Helix Foundation for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 Group. Special thanks to Psycho, Thriller at Play, Alex Matthews, Azriel, Denzuko, David, Julie Bernstein, Chris S., Joe Cadillac, and Mickey Avigaric for story leads, and to Julie Bernstein for writing in. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast, or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 172 will drop on March 29th. Stay safe and be well.
The thing!